to the, all of the consumers who might be looking for it.
Senator Vanderveer or Mr. Kerber, in this case, the Johnson home, with their in Gaylord, I assume they've gone to the county board to get this. Have they also, I mean, presumably the county makes some referrals to them. Isn't that something that any provider would just go to the county and say, look, we want to be able to provide this service, and at the same time, please, we're there and we can take referrals?
I think maybe Mrs. Johnson, yes, can answer that.
What the confusion is, people are not getting their choice between 18 and 55. Senator Vanderveer is correct that they're saying they have to be over 55. Also, the funding is getting to be very misinterpreted by different people, that we do want to be covered under TBI and CADI. The individuals are choosing this, and it's becoming difficult to kind of navigate through everything. Mr. Kerber is correct. We've never had any issues with the variance process and have always received a variance. But with this confusion, my main concern is that someone who is not happy in maybe one of the institutional day programs, such around our home as a nursing home, that's their choice, will not be given a least restrictive, more integrated home smaller program, because it will say on the list 55 and older, and that's by statute. It has to be on any kind of referral list that has to be on there.
Questions from the committee? And Mr. Kerber, so I understand what part of the issue here is, that older adults, presumably if we define 55 and older as older adults, is they may have the day services, their demands or their needs are tend to be different than a 25-year-old. Is that the reason for not having a blanket thing where they, your opposition or concern about the legislation would be that 25-year-old needs different day services than a 60-year-old?
Mr. Chair, I think that is one of the concerns we've heard from advocates and all sorts of people. Yes.
Could I hear what other concerns you? Because you said that was one of the concerns. What were the other ones?
Well, the other concern that that I mentioned was just that the way this is set up, and again, of course, this has nothing to do with the Johnsons, but any of the other 5,000 adult foster care license holders who are out there now could, under this bill, start providing family adult day services as well. And there isn't any prior approval requirement anymore, because they wouldn't need a separate license. When, if and when it's determined that they are providing those services, then certainly the county would be monitoring them, as Senator Vanderveer said, for compliance with those standards that are in place. But the prior approval process would no longer exist for those programs.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I think this must be something Mr. Kerber has discovered since we did some legislation on this a few years ago. I have an email I'll forward to you saying that this could easily be done with one license. So I can get that to you. And with regard to the age groups working together, Nancy is 50. She would not be allowed in a room with the 55-year-olds for some reason. That's a potential problem. I can't see it. I'm sorry.
Can I make one comment on that, being that Michael's 20, and he has enjoyed so much getting to know the other clients and the elderly, and he brings to them joy and plays violin for them and integrates with them, and then in turn they share stories and they tell of the past, and I think there's so much to be said about integrating the different ages. It's kind of like homeschooling. You can get all different levels and bring together and share from each other and learn from each other. And I think it makes the elderly maybe younger when they can be around youth. And Michael has programs that he does just for him, but when he's there during the day, he's with them and they share, and it's a really neat atmosphere. So,
and I think what we're looking for is choice. This definitely wouldn't be for everybody. Anyone who's on any waiver has a county case manager involved, and they evaluate if they're appropriate. So we have to remember and sort out what is really the issue. The issue is giving handicapped people choice, and that's what we really want to offer. And why I started this as a nurse, I used to work at what was St. Paul Ramsey, and I started this to give people an option because most of our clients had to go into the larger institutional programs.
Senator Prittner, so, and then we had Steve Larson wanted to testify, too.
Well, I could probably wait until Mr. Larson testifies, but what I'm hearing is that your family members are in the program. You're not having any problem with it. And I really question why we would change a licensing law that already works and the waivers are working, and why we would change something broadly all over the state when we have no understanding about what problems it would create, and what you have right now is working for you.
Well, it is to a point. There's a lot of confusion to get these people in the house and to get them the variances at the level of they hear from the county, well, gee, you can't use that program. I think that's only for 55 and older. So it seems smooth now because we've got everyone in and they're using it. I understand what you're saying. But unfortunately, to get to the home for the person to get this choice, it's difficult when you put that barrier of 55 or older. There's nothing really in law that, you know, you have to go through then this variance process and fill out the forms, and many case managers do not know of that, and it's difficult to get that out to everybody. So if it's working so well for people between the ages of 18 and 55, why wouldn't we put it into law is what I would ask. And secondly, the thing that has confused me, if we're concerned about the different age groups, some of our clients that have come to us that were under age 55, their only other alternative was to actually be placed in a nursing home. And there's a whole gamut of people of age 18 over. So I guess I'm confused.
Senator Vanderveer.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Solon, that is a very good question. And I will tell you the reason that the Johnsons have the situation the way they do is because Mr. Johnson and Mrs. Johnson have spent as much time at the Capitol probably as they have at their work trying to defend off the bureaucracy that has made it extremely difficult for them to do this. They are highly competent and very knowledgeable in the current rules and law. However, if we would want this to be available across the state, most operators are not going to have the time or wherewithal. I'm not sure they have the time, but they have the commitment because they believe that this service is extremely beneficial and should be offered in the rest of the state.
Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm Steve Larson with the ARC of Minnesota, but I'm here today testifying as co-chair for the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, which represents 100 organizations that advocate for persons with disabilities. I did want to clarify that today is the ARC Day at the Capitol, but we did not bring our band along, so we can't take responsibility for that. Today I'm here to testify in behalf of the status quo or the current variance system. And I'm certainly willing, and the Consortium of Citizens with Disabilities is willing to see if in future discussions we can deal with some of the issues that have been identified today. But it's been the history of the ARC, and it's been the history of many members of the consortium to work so that people do have choices during the day. We had a rally today, and we identified issues. Some of those people that spoke came out of state hospitals. We've had a major initiative for the last several years to get people out of nursing homes. And right now, with the governor's supplemental budget that he presented on Friday, we're very challenged with funding for persons with disabilities. What happens in those situations? People go into programs in which there's the least expenditure. And we think it's good that people get out of their homes, get into employment situations, and that's what we should be striving to do. And so for lowering this to 18 to make it an automatic option during tough budget times, we are very concerned that this might become an option for people that really do not want to be caught in this type of situation. And so we're very committed to working with Senator Vanderveer and the Johnsons, and I haven't been involved in this situation up to this point to discuss future alternatives, but today we would not support this legislation.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Vanderveer, for bringing this bill. I don't oppose this bill in concept because actually when my children were little, I started a daycare in a nursing home. So I do think mixing up the generations, there's certainly some benefit for doing that. The thing I'm a little concerned about is related to what Senator Prentner-Solon was talking about earlier, is that if we're moving to a statewide statute change today, I really feel like we need to have a lot more discussion about it. I know there's all sorts of licensing implications, and I'm very much a stakeholder advocate, and I really want to get all the stakeholders around the table and really understand what's going on and try to come to some sort of consensus. So it seems to me there's still a gap between where you want to head and where some of the organizations that Mr. Larson represents are, and I don't feel like I've had enough information to make a sweeping statute change today. I wonder if we need to have a little bit more discussion on trying to figure out a way to give people what they need in terms of options, because, you know, I'm a great options advocate, and yet, you know, I don't want to just leap in and do something today that might have some unintended consequences. So would you be willing to continue having conversations with the other groups?
Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson Ropes, I would, and I can understand your position, having just heard about this and this being the first time we've presented it. And so, yes.
Thank you.
And on that point, I mean, I don't know what the other members of the committee are thinking right now, but I'm wondering, first of all, Senator Vanderveer, where is the bill in the House? Is it?
It's not as far as this one.
That's first, the first hearing. Okay. What I'm wondering is if it would make more sense, because I highly doubt it's likely to pass. Senator Berglund says there is a financial impact and would want to see the bill. What I'm wondering is if, instead of dealing with the bill now, if we take it as a commitment from Mr. Larson and the Coalition for Citizens with Disabilities and the department, Mr. Kerber, so sit down with not just you and the Johnsons, but others who are interested, because I think they raise some very legitimate concerns about how you get people. It's worked out for the people, the families who have family members there, but I think you raise some good points that others may not know about it, and it would be difficult to do, and there may be a way to address this. I think I'm also hearing a lot of people who are, I mean, the issue, the concerns that are being raised are such that if it was a crisis, if you were not getting the waivers, if you were not getting people in your home, I'd say then we might have to try and deal with more urgently. But I think because it's not ideal but acceptable, at least it's working right now for in your situation, that before we would try and change it statewide, that I think it would be very helpful if you could have some meetings with the department and with the ARC of Minnesota and others that may be interested. Because I'm sure there are plenty of other foster care homes around the state who would be interested in the same thing that you're raising.
And Mr. Chair, I would you make some good points. I would point out that, however, getting agreement in the end may be a little bit difficult, because I think there are some business and bureaucratic interests involved, other than just the beneficiary, which would be the consumer.
And
that said, I would agree with you on the other.
And Senator Vanderveer, I think the committee would be very sensitive if you felt that you weren't getting cooperation. But I think a lot of the advocacy groups have the same interests that you do. They want it to work. They want people to have the options. And I think they would be on your side in this, in terms of trying to find a way to make it work. So I will recommend that we lay the bill aside for now and then try and facilitate that and those meetings. And I'd be happy to help try and facilitate them as well. Okay?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Vanderveer and Johnson family and all the residents of the home. Thank you. Senator Betzel, you've been waiting a long time. And I think this is a bill we've seen something similar to it before.
You have, Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 2747 is a revision of a bill that passed the legislature last year and then was vetoed by the governor on the statewide health insurance for the school districts. Before I start, Mr. Chair, it appears that in your packets you may have the bill as introduced.
Uh-oh.
This bill went to the Commerce Committee with no amendments. It went through the State and Local Government Operations Committee with one amendment. And you don't need the first engrossment, actually, but I'll tell you, the A1 amendment, which I have right here,
okay,
consists of one line. Just so you know what it is, on page 9, line 4, after the period we inserted, the board must elect a chair or co-chairs from its membership at its first meeting. So the bill is introduced, and the first engrossment are identical except for that one line, which really doesn't affect
the interest of the state and local government option. It's a matter
of fact,
Senator Rest.
Yes. We had to conform to the guidelines.
I would move that.
So otherwise, you don't have the first engrossment, but you really don't need it.
Senator Corning, it's already in the bill.
Oh, it's already in the bill.
We just have the wrong
okay.
version
yeah.
in front
oh,
of us.
Okay.
So if members of the committee are willing to work with that, with the understanding that one sentence was added in state and local, we'll just proceed with this version then, because unless anybody's objecting to
as
that.
As I say, it's one
we'll
sentence added right at the end of the bill, which doesn't affect anything else that you have, may have an
issue. Well, I may object. I don't
well,
know.
Well, shoot some more trees. Huh?
And I've got the amendment right here. It's one line. So, okay.
Yeah. Senator Betzel, why don't you go ahead and present
sure.
the bill then?
And Mr. Chair, members, as I say, this is the statewide health insurance bill. And just to refresh the committee's memory on some of the concepts that we talked about and voted on last year, this would establish a statewide pool, not a plan, a single plan, but a pool for health insurance for school districts. It actually passed the Senate in 2005. It passed the Senate and the House last year. The governor vetoed it. There's a number of reasons that he cited in his veto message. Some of the main ones included he felt that the reserves being set up were insufficient. He wanted more oversight by the Commerce Department, and he was concerned about some of the specificity of the plans. What this bill did was to create, out of a pool, at least 6 plans, from a super cheap plan to an expensive plan with a couple in between, and then each school district would have to choose their own plan through the collective bargaining process. The whole idea was based on an actual actuarial study that was actually done a couple of years ago, which found that although a pool in and of itself is not going to make health care costs go down, it would save money on administrative costs. It would slow down some of the increases. There's a couple of issues that have cropped up over the years, whether it should be mandatory, which this bill in the past and now makes it mandatory that if a school district does purchase health insurance, they must do it through the pool. And the reason why for that is so that school districts don't just opt in and opt out. There's always going to be some winners and losers when you look across the spectrum of school districts. You may have a school district today that has a lot of young employees that can probably get a rather good favorable rates, but as those young employees become older, it's going to be more expensive. So you can't just have a plan that's only going to be for the people who can't afford it anywhere else, and this is the place they go, because you even the costs out when you have a statewide pool. So the bill, as you have before you, is very similar to what passed the legislature before. I can cite a couple of changes that were made just for your information here. Just on page 2, lines 18 and 19, we're more specific at what the board of directors is that is going to govern, oversee this pool. That language actually wasn't in there, although the concepts were in. Similarly, language on lines 2, line 28 and 29, and then defining the board of directors on 3.8 and 3.9. Again, the concepts were there last year, but not that exact language. There's a particular provision, and Senator Lynch is not here, but I do want to comment on that. If you look, some other new language, and this is more substantive, on page 4, line 28, and 29 and 30, one of the concerns the Department of Commerce had was that we didn't quite make the setting up of this pool in sync with other existing laws and statutes and rules for self-insured, and we tried to do that here. Now, actually, Senator Lynch had an amendment last year that said that if the employees would not be liable for the cost, and it's my understanding that actually conflicts with some of the Department of Commerce rules, so that's one of the reasons why Senator Lynch's amendment is not in here. But we are trying to make it work to have it consistent with other existing laws. And actually, continuing on page 4, line 30, that they may not offer self-insurance within the first 2 years and may only do so after it's financially solvent by the Commission of Commerce. That language is added, too. I know that the Department of Commerce still has some issues. We've already been through, as I say, the Commerce Committee and state and local government operations. We actually had an amendment Senator Lori was prepared to offer that we thought would have tried to tighten up some of the language to address some of Commerce's concerns, but apparently it's still a work in progress, and so at this time we're not prepared to do it, but it's my understanding that the parties are still wanting to work and negotiate to try to find it. As you must really know, Mr. Chair, at this stage of the session, it's like painting a moving train. You try to hit one part and it's already gone to somewhere else, so we're trying to catch up. Just on one other issue that is probably of the interest of this particular committee is a new language that is on page 5, lines 16 to 22. And I indicated that the governor had some concerns that about the specificity of the plans. We said there'd be 6 plans, a super cheap one, an expensive one, a couple in between. This is a new provision which basically says that they could use the same contracts that are negotiated by the state through the employee insurance group. If they negotiate something, we can use the same concepts in developing the plans here. So that would at least give something that is more familiar in the details of the plan that are being presented. Other than that, Mr. Chair, members, as I say, this is an issue that has been around before as recently as last year. And with those changes that I've noted, which I hope address the concerns of the governor's veto, that's that. As I say, there are still some outstanding issues that Commerce would like to tighten it up, but we are more than happy to keep working with them to see that gets done. This bill, if it moves from here, I've already hit 3 of the committees that we've hit last year. The other committee that saw it last year was the Judiciary Committee because of a minor data practices issue. Since we've got the very same language from last year, they don't need to see it. So if it moves from here, it would go to the Finance Committee where we'd still be able to look at some of the issues here. So that, Mr. Chair, members, is just a quick overview of the bill, and I know that there are people here on both sides of the issue who have an interest in it.
Senator Coring, before a testimony.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Senator Betzel, it sounds good. It sounds like you're trying to work out the objections that the governor's office has. My question to you then would be, it appears that you're working out some differences. Have you been in contact with anybody in the administration as far as running the language by them and trying to, you know, I hate to see all of us go through a whole lot of motions and then get to the governor's office and then he just say, no, I just don't want to do this. I just hate to see that happen again.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Coring, me neither. You know, I don't want to spend my time on a bill and have it it shot down. I mean, I'm not going to bang my head against the wall. However, you know, the lead agency that would have an interest in this is the Commission of Commerce. And I can tell you if the Commission of Commerce has concerns, the governor is going to have those very same concerns. So that's the main group that we've been trying to, you know, the Education Minnesota and the Commerce Department and, you know, possibly other parties have been trying to work out some language with. And we do want to get it there. And I know Commerce is here right now. Obviously, some of the language that's in here, they still have some concerns with. We had an amendment that I thought was going to do it. Apparently, there's still some discussions going on, so it may be premature at this time to try to adopt it because we may need to make some changes. But, yes, I want to address whatever concerns Commerce has. You know, and I guess we'll just have to see if we've addressed all the issues the governor has when, you know, if and when the bill does reach his desk, and I'm hopeful it does, and we will do the best we can to try to address everything that he had.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could just make one other comment, I would just say that to Mr. Chairman and members, do we know if this is going to work? We don't know. But if we don't, and I've said, you've heard me say this before, if we don't try something, we're never going to know. And we're seeing school districts struggling with the rising cost of health care and it just squeezing their budget. And so this, again, is just like every new administration comes in, they all seem to have the answers to fix education. They all seem to have the answers to fix how to get the economy going. And they try new ideas. And this is a new idea. I like the putting everybody into a pool. Do I know if it's going to work? I don't know. But if we don't start talking about trying something and we sit back and don't do anything, we're not going to get the problem fixed. And so, you know, I am supportive of this. I'm skeptical, but I'm supportive thus far of the statewide teacher pool. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wergen, and then Senator Hand, and then the witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Betzold, I just wanted to mention that. Maybe if it were voluntary, I could help you talk the governor into signing it. I'm consistent.
Yes, you are, Senator.
Senator Hand and Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if Senator Betzold you know or Senator Marty, but is this bill going to the Education Committee? Last year it never went to the Education Committee. And I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to hear this in education if it isn't going there, because it has substantial impact on school districts. And it should be discussed with its effect on education governance and policy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Han, it does not in and of itself, it affects school districts, but that's not education policy. As I understand, I went through the jurisdiction list last year of the Education Policy Committee. It does have funding implications, which is why it must go through the full finance committee. Last year, I don't think the E-12 budget division did not wish to see it, but the health and human services budget division certainly did see it before it went to the full finance committee. So, but there's nothing in here that deals with education policy, and so within their jurisdiction. So it did not go there, and I don't think it'll go there this year.
Senator Hand, then Senator.
I find that hard to believe. It's a insurance plan for teachers, and I think teachers work in schools, and I think what goes on in schools is subject to education policy, and I think it's just it's amazing to me that we're willing to have this debate and entertain this discussion about something that would have a huge impact. The districts that I represent, they say this would have a huge impact not only on their budget but also on their governance, and we're never going to discuss it in an education committee. And I just wonder why we wouldn't do that. If this is a great plan, and if this is going to be great benefit to teachers, it would seem to me that an education committee hearing would be appropriate, and I have to wonder why we don't want to do that.
Well, I can't say anything more than I have, Mr. Chair and Senator Han. Again, this, you know, this is not something that is a classroom topic. There are fiscal issues, of course there are, and that's within the province of the full finance committee.
Senator Lynch, did you still have something?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Betzold, a couple questions on the bill itself. One, it talks about that monies are being collected by the general fund and the healthcare access fund, and I was just a little unclear on how the healthcare access fund was involved in this. And I'm looking to see what line I read that on. Maybe counsel can help me look for that while I'm going to my next question. My next question is with line 4.10, where the it's indicating that the pool will initially offer at least 6 health plans. And this is a question that I often get and that I often, frankly, ask. We don't really know what those 6 plans really offer or look like. And that just continues to kind of make me just a little bit nervous.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lynch, I think you were out of the you weren't there a few minutes ago as I kind of went through the bill. That was one of the issues that was raised last year, and new language that was page 5, lines 16 through 22, do try to flesh out a little bit more information on that. I mean, I don't think a statute is appropriate place to flesh out all the details, you know, of each plan. However, we do want to have something that we are familiar with, and we can use the same contracts negotiated by the state for the employee insurance group, which is something we are familiar with, and use those very same plans and very same concepts as part of this. And so that's the language on page 5, lines 16 through 22, accomplish that. So that, again, that's an attempt to have something familiar when we're discussing those plans.
And Senator Lynch, Senate Counsel can comment on the language about the Health Care Access Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lynch, these plans would be required to pay the premium tax under 297I, which the premium tax is deposited into the Health Care Access Fund.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lynch,
thank you for the clarification. I guess my further comment would be I represent 5 school districts. I have districts that think they like this, and I have districts that think that this is not in their best interest. And I'm supposed to represent all of them. And to the extent that I can do that, and I share with many that while the issue before us today speaks solely to teachers and the education community, we have this conversation with many, many other constituencies. And I am not prepared to offer an amendment today, but I would like to say that it is because I have districts that are on both sides of this issue, if you will, and it's because of my work on a school board prior to coming to the Senate that I was hopeful that we might see some language in this bill that would make this proposal voluntary.
Senator Torres-Ray, then the witnesses.
Senator Betzel and Senator Lynch, I happen to represent one district that is the largest district in the state of Minnesota that is opposed to this, but I will be supporting this bill. And the reason I do that is because I believe it is the only way we can move into a long-term decision that will benefit all teachers. Today, we have heard, you and I have heard this again and again, every time we talk about healthcare reform, there is a group, because of their interest, that they come and oppose healthcare reform that in the long term is supposed to apply to everyone. And this is a very tough decision. For me, this is very tough. You cannot imagine how many teachers have called me and say, you know, we're going to have to pay more, and we don't want to do this. And I think my response to them is, well, today, think about the future and think about all the teachers in the state of Minnesota. So, Senator Betzel, this is a very difficult decision for some of us, as Senator Lynch just stated. But after looking at this proposal for a year and connecting with many teachers, I think that this is a good solution. And like Senator Coring said, I don't know if it is perfect, but I think it moves us in a direction that we do need to go as a state. And so I face the same challenges, but I do think that this is good policy. And unfortunately, you know, some are going to be opposed, and that we're going to have to deal with the consequences, I guess. That's why we have an election title, I suppose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By the way, Senator Torres-Ray, one of my school districts, Noka-Hennepin, claims it's the largest school district now. So between Minneapolis and Noka-Hennepin, they're both claiming they're the largest. So. Okay.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Duer, and I am president of Education Minnesota, the State Educators Union. Thank you for listening to my testimony today. I am here to urge you to support Senate File 2747, which creates a statewide school employee health insurance pool. I represent 70,000 educators across the state who are teachers, school support professionals, bus drivers, clerical workers, school counselors, and more. These people, who are entrusted with the education of our children every day, are suffering through nothing less than a full-blown crisis in health care. Of course, we know that educators are not alone in facing this health care crisis. Many Minnesotans from all walks of life are experiencing similar problems, but the difference is this is one crisis that you can help fix today. The implications of this crisis go beyond the people who are directly impacted. The crisis affects the state budget. It affects our economy. It affects the ability of the state to attract great people to education, and which in turn affects our students and the future of our state. As you know, Education Minnesota and its members have been working hard to address this crisis for several years. Last year, a statewide employee health insurance pool passed both the houses of legislature with strong bipartisan support, but the bill was later vetoed by the governor. But I want to let you know today that I have reached out to the governor as well as other interested parties to address concerns and to ensure that we have a bill that's viable and passable and ultimately something that the governor can support. But let me first tell you a little more about the health care crisis we're facing. In the past 6 years, the school employee health insurance statewide has more than doubled. Insurance costs are driving people out of education. Insurance costs are rising faster than any funding increases the state has provided, and they are absorbing dollars that could otherwise be spent on instruction. In many cases, they are canceling out any salary increases school employees might have seen. In just the past 2 years, average premiums for school employee health insurance have shot up at least 14% and 23% for policies covering the employee plus one family member. Deductibles have risen by 143% per person and 173% per family. Out-of-pocket costs for prescriptions and other services have increased 40 to 60%. At least six school districts now offer no health insurance coverage for their employees, and many more are considering dropping this insurance. This is a trend we can expect to continue. In my home district of Robbinsdale, a teacher making $36,000 a year has to pay more than $10,000 for family health insurance. Many education assistants have to pay to go to work because they cannot afford the premiums that are provided them with their health insurance. That this is an appalling it's appalling and it cannot continue. We must do something and we must do it now. We must pass this bill this year. As I have said, we have made many changes to the bill, and Senator Betzel has addressed the governor's concerns. Look at that. Wow. I've just promoted him. I would like to highlight some of those for you. First, we've addressed the questions about oversight. Our plan will be under the regulatory oversight of the State Commerce Commissioner, and this is the same type of oversight that service co-ops plan to receive. Second, regarding the financial stability of the plan, the bill now provides for the statewide health insurance plan to be fully insured. And third, the bill offers an option of the plan designed to be similar of that of the well-regarded state employees' health insurance plan. And of course, you know the benefits of the plan. It creates a statewide risk pool of 200,000 individuals, spreading the cost over a larger group. It reduces administrative costs. It provides greater clout to negotiate discounts with medical providers, and it stabilizes insurance premiums and reduce cost spikes. A year ago, the only thing that stood between school employees and more affordable health insurance was Governor Tim Pawlenty's veto pen. We hope that by working with him, by working with you, and working with other interested parties, we will have a bill that will work and will pass this year, and it simply must pass. Each year, the health insurance crisis gets worse, but this year we can do something about it. Please pass Senate File 2747. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Dewar? Senator Hand, and then I prefer if people can try and keep their questions to a minimum until we get all the witnesses done, but go ahead if you have questions.
Well, yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this just with respect to the testimony we just heard, and we all have a letter here from the Fridley Public Schools, which is ironic since this has nothing to do with education, that is from a public school district. But at any rate, in the says that they have been working with a broker to deal with their insurance costs. They've looked at the cost drivers. They've done some things to get at the things that drive the costs of medical care, which is the underlying cost of insurance, is the cost of care. And just shifting the payment of the premiums does nothing in itself to change the costs of insurance or the cost of care. But anyway, they've done this with working with this broker. Say now that their renewal offer is 0% increase. Now, in your testimony, you just said that everybody is facing these huge increases, and that's just not true. There are some districts that are, and there are some districts that are not. And I think it depends on how aggressive or how motivated or how whatever the variabilities might be, but individual districts are finding ways to deal with these insurance options in ways that are innovative, creative, and seem to be working. And so if your testimony is that every school district is getting hit with huge increases in insurance, then what they're telling us is not true? Or what is the difference between what they're saying and what you're saying?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I didn't say every school district. I said that's the average over the state. And as individual districts negotiate, they have less leverage than a group of 200,000 lives. And that's what we're proposing, is to put all the school employees together so that they can leverage the best negotiating power for health insurance.
0% is pretty good.
Thank you. Continue with your testimony. Chris.
I have somebody who wants to make very brief testimony. Yeah.
Hi, members of the committee. My name is Kristen Beckman. I'm the executive director of the Service Employees International Union. And of the 200,000 lives that we talk about that could be in this pool, SEIU members are sort of the lower wage workers that would be involved in this pool. We are all the folks in schools who are not teachers, the bus drivers, the lunch ladies, the custodians, the groundskeepers. And for our folks, while I know there are some teachers and some teachers in school districts who have said, you know, like Fridley, we can manage this, our folks are definitely the lower wage workers in schools, and we are truly struggling. And Mark Schrubering in Sauk Rapids School District is a single dad of three daughters. He's able to afford the single coverage his employer offers, but he can't afford the family coverage. He's got one sick daughter, and so he goes out into the private market by himself and buys insurance just for her and doesn't insure his other two daughters. No one should have to make choices like that. You guys hear these sob stories over and over in this committee. This is a solution, and I appreciate Senator Torres-Ray, Senator Coring's words of, we're not sure it's going to work, but we're sure that 200 lives together into a pool, managing risk across a pool, six different plans, that it could be a solution to very real problems that are out there. So while I know people, it is definitely referred to as the teacher's bill, and Education Minnesota has been an amazing leader on this, I do hope you recognize that there are a lot of lower-wage individuals who would be in this pool who would definitely benefit from the opportunity of being a part of a larger risk pool where there would be some cost savings. So I'd ask you for your support for this bill. Thanks.
Questions from Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
My name's Kristen Beckman.
Ms. Beckman, thank you. I'm sorry. Just a question for you. As I said, the districts that I represent, all three of them, I have indicated that this plan would raise their costs to provide insurance. In other words, to do this, the way this would work is that you're going to pool everybody together in the districts that, like Fridley and others, Eden Prairie and other ones I represent, who have been seeing relatively modest or maybe zero increases in their insurance costs and have been working these things. They would see their premium rates go up because they would, in the course of the pool, you're going to have some kind of averaging of cost. So if you're members of your union are employed in these districts, they will see an immediate cost increase in their coverage and no change in benefit. And now how will they perceive this as a good thing? When you have to go to, I don't know what number of school districts across the state, maybe it's half of them or a third of them or whatever the number is, who are going to see cost increases in their premiums as a result of this change with no change in benefit, how will they be looking at this as a plus to them when their thing we see is an increase in cost to those employees?
Ms. Beckman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, it's a very good question, and it would be a difficult conversation. But all I can say is right now we have 23 contracts that are open all over healthcare costs, and that by taking the negotiating of healthcare costs off of these contracts and pulling it into a pool and having them be worked, that there would be much more cost savings at each level of the school district. And so my hope is that by having this brought up from sort of the bargaining table for each different unit, because we negotiate separately from the teachers for our health care and our wages and salaries and things like that, and now we would all be together as one, that I think that, you know, and people could still decide their plans in between, I still think that there would be a benefit of having us all united into 200 lives negotiating out there rather than separately into different unions, all trying to buy separate health care plans. And so while I think those would be difficult conversations, I think in the end it would be beneficial.
Thank you very much. Ms. Augsburg, are you ready?
Mr. Chair, this is fine.
Okay, not going to this.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair. I know there's other people who may want to be heard on this one, so I'll vacate the table and let them an opportunity.
The other, the opposition, Mr. Straczynski, Mr. Griffin, and Ms. Schwab. I will point out that if witnesses would talk softer, we could hear the concert better.
Mr. Chairman, only if we can vote on the voice votes, okay? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have a handout.
We'll get that picked up.
I'll talk about the costs.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Straczynski, and I represent the service cooperatives that we've heard a lot about here today. We provide insurance to 285 school districts right now, 185 cities, 60 counties, and 170 other governmental units. That's 700 governmental units we provide insurance to right now, and we insure collectively about 100,000 lives throughout Minnesota. We have pools. We do this. We take advantage of the big ticket items. We get the best costs possible. I just want to react to the witness from SEIU. I understand their passion. However, she's talking about who pays for what. Doesn't deal with cost drivers. She's talking about they have 34 contracts out for negotiations. That's about who's going to pay for health insurance. Doesn't have anything to do with how much health insurance costs. It's going to be who pays for what. And I think that really kind of what this bill is all about to begin with. In any event, we think we're doing something right. We're opposed to this bill for the following reasons. It's been around for 8 years, but this bill, this legislation, does not address cost drivers. The service cooperatives, we've done an excellent job in controlling costs, whether it's wellness programs, prescription drugs, those kinds of things that can be controlled. We've reduced our administrative fees. We're 2 points cheaper right now than your own state employee insurance program to which you belong to as far as administrative fees are concerned. We've done all those kinds of things. We've saved a lot of money there. This is a billion-dollar price tag for Education Minnesota. It becomes, I think, under this bill, essentially a state liability. The distinction is that with service cooperatives today, remember, we insure 700 governmental units. We were created by the legislature to do this one time and insure 100,000 lives. There's no liability back to the school districts. We absorb the liability through our pools and through our funding mechanism and our reserves right now. This bill will not provide insurance. It's just going to add any more benefits or whatever and things unless they're negotiated for. It's just going to add more costs. In fact, this bill the previous witnesses testified to 200,000 people belonging to this plan. That's if everybody possibly enrolled. It's out there. This bill doesn't allow for that to happen even. It allows for you, if you have cash in lieu, which is a practice that exists in about 40% of the school districts, cash in lieu. In other words, you can take $5,000 in cash because that's what they negotiated for. Instead of buying insurance, you can take that cash and go out and buy your own insurance or do whatever you want with the money. You don't have to belong to their local school district pool. That practice is allowed in this bill through 2010, and then it's institutionalized forever. It's a negotiated benefit. You can't take it away. That has nothing to do with the cost of insurance. That's a negotiated benefit, a negotiated situation there. So in the end, the result is if you're sick, you go into the pool. If the money goes to individual plans, and 40% of it does in the state, then you have individual plans paid for by the employer, and then you've got plans that they negotiated no money for the family coverage. Of course those families got to pay $10,000 out of their pocket. That's what they collectively bargained for. Let's keep it in mind of what this is really all about. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try and cut some of my testimony out. Let me get to the sheet that I just handed out, though, and I think this is kind of where it's really at. At the end of the day, you have this sheet. We took the testimony of the Department of Commerce last year as well as the testimony of Education Minnesota. And here's what you have to do. The first page talks about an increase of $755 for a year at the bottom, if you take a look at that. How you arrive at these numbers is very simple. This is what this legislation does. First of all, it requires this new plan to pay MCHA, new pool to pay MCHA taxes. Self-insured programs like ours today don't essentially pay those MCHA taxes. So that's a cost increase, and you've done nothing except adopt this bill. The second one is paid-in capital in reserve buildup. They want to plan. The bill calls for a fully insured company initially, and then going to a self-insured plan 2 years from now. When you go to a fully insured company, whether it's an HMO, a Blue Cross, Blue Shield, whomever, you don't get $150 million worth of their reserves that they have to take care of the claims for free. You have to pay for that. It's like going to a bank and saying, I need $150 million in reserves. How much will you charge me to borrow $150 million? Whether you're the state of Minnesota or anybody, you pay for that. The cost of that money, according to our actuaries, is about $82 million to pay for that dollars the first 2 years while you're a fully insured company. That's what this bill does. The second thing is that you have to now build up the reserves because you want to go self-insured. In year three, you want to be self-insured. The Department of Commerce's testimony consistently has been you have to have the reserves. These are reserves for $1.1 billion worth of claims. You cannot start a plan until you've got the reserves in place. That's $150 million. Now, this bill says you will build up those reserves prior to starting the self-insured pool. You have to add those costs to the bill as well. It's another $82 million for that, $22 million for the cost of capital. At the end of the day, this bill, you've done nothing but add $151 million over the current costs. It doesn't address cost drivers. This is just what you want. They have to put in place in order to be where they are today. That equates to $755 per enrollee, per plan today, increase, and you've done nothing except adopt this bill. Now, that second page simply, very quickly, deals with cost trend. The cost trend is this is how much more it's going to cost when you wait till 2010 to do it. It's going to cost on an average of $1,165 per plan to go to this plan, increase over 2 years, each year for 2 years, and then $600 or $555 each year after that to pay the MCHA taxes and what have you, and you've done nothing except adopt the bill. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that's an important statistic. You don't need the bill. There's more competition for school districts and insurance than ever before. In fact, we know many of the collective bargaining units can go to PEEP. They're getting bids from PEEP, which is a public employees insurance program. That's a part of how the collective bargaining process certainly works. They're doing that, and that's great. Competition does exist in the marketplace. There are no guarantees that there will ever be a creative system for school districts and teachers that's different from the current system. No guarantees. Collective bargaining carve-outs, adverse selection techniques will still apply, and this bill institutionalizes a lot of that. So how big is the problem? I'll tell you how it works in our pools. Let me put it in perspective for you. Two-thirds of the people in our pools, remember I talked about 100,000 people? Two-thirds of those enrollees in our service cooperative pools have better coverage than the private sector, and you should know that the employer pays for that because they're individual plans, individuals. That's what they negotiated for at the local level. That's okay with us. So they pay for the full cost, two-thirds. And yet the School Board Association, as Representative Schwab here in a minute, but of the School Board Association, is not asking for the bill. Mr. Chairman, I submit that the committee and the entire legislature has other and better alternatives that work for everybody. This committee has heard a lot about that. In fact, the health care reform task forces will have a positive impact on the cost drivers of insurance. Big picture in mind, health care exchange, universal health coverage, creation of other purchasing alliances, price discounts for more competition, electronic medical records, all these things, standard benefit designs, statewide health improvement programs. These are the things this committee has been dealing with all session. Those are the things that are the cost drivers that will affect insurance for everybody, including teachers in Minnesota. Finally, this is a very big decision with enormous costs and service ramifications. If you force voluntary member school districts, all the ones I talked about, 285 school districts, if you force all these school districts into service cooperatives, insurance pools, or other arrangements that they have in the metro area into a mandated new statewide program, there'll be less competition, more structural costs, and no real solutions to the rising cost of health care. Is that what you really want to do? And you should think about that. That's what this bill is. Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Straczynski, is that, do I have that right?
Correct, Senator.
Thank you. And I appreciate your little analysis here. One question I have, your organization, service co-ops, are providing insurance to different school districts. I guess a couple of questions. First of all, we heard testimony that says that school districts are seeing double-digit increases. Is that your experience with the insurance that you're offering, that that school districts are getting double-digit increases from the plans that you offer? That'd be the first question. And then just secondly, how would you describe the differences between the kind of structure that the co-ops offer versus the structure that is being proposed in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, is there double-digit inflationary increases in some areas? Yes, but not every year. It's kind of an averaging. Over the long term, we've discovered that we're where the cost trend happens to be for everybody. We have many school districts that have the costs go up in double digits, and some years there's zero. Some years there's less than zero, actually. Depends upon the nature of the condition as the ratings occur, the geographical ratings, and what the claims have been, experiences have been for that school district. This bill creates the same model. It does, because it allows for geographical price differences in premiums and geographical differences in ratings. So it allows geographical pooling, which is what we do. It creates the same model that already exists today. The second question, I'm sorry, Senator.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Straczynski, the second question is just we're being asked to adopt a different sort of model of insurance coverage or pooling, and we have one that exists, and I'm just trying to get a sense of how they differ. How is what we're doing today through your organizations differ from what is being proposed?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little perplexed to determine what is different, because it allows the current practice to continue, except there's six plans the school district would have a choice to choose from. Some school districts have 10, some have 4. I mean it's all over the map now. Structurally, they're mandating everybody in, but the bill provides for carve-outs, exceptions, as I talked about, for cash in lieu. And those kinds of practices are allowed to continue. So we don't see a significant difference in that, except that what you have to understand is we're pooling already. We already achieved the maximum benefits you can get. When you get to 10,000, everybody, and you've heard this the committee before, once you get to 10,000, there's no more benefits to squeeze out of that. You've already got cheap discounts and prescription drugs and whatever, so we've already achieved a lot of that. That's where we're perplexed to do this. The way to look at this legislation from my perspective, think about it, is who pays how much for what. It isn't to do with the insurance plan itself. It's how much does the individual employee pay, how much does the employer pay. That's what this bill does. I mean, that's the way you have to look at it. And when somebody's costs go up, it's because maybe that's what they collectively bargained for families as opposed to individuals. I mean, that's the local decision, so that's how we look at it.
Senator Dow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Straczynski?
Straczynski, yes, Senator.
Thank you for your testimony. You kept talking about, I guess what I wanted to refer back to at one point here is Senator Hahn brought up a thing about Fridley Public Schools and a 0% increase. And it looks as though some of the strategies that they employed you might be able to address and why that would have resulted in a 0% effective increase. They talked about things about like education, about the cost of generic versus non-generic, wellness campaigns, discussions with our non-actives, things like that. And I don't know how that translates into actual savings. I mean, just discussions and a little bit of information that how costs are going actually down. You mentioned that it's the cost of insurance that's causing these increases, or the cost of health care, not the cost of insurance. And I'm not sure how this translates into a 0% increase, these type of strategies.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, like Senator Marty's legislation in the past dealing with that, it affects the cost driver because that's co-pays. Who pays? And generic drugs versus prescription drugs, there's a savings there. And if your plan allows for that to happen, you can save money. Not all plans throughout the state do that. So they've done some individual things at the local level to save money, to provide more affordable insurance. Other ways to do it is to create a health savings account. That also saves. That can also save the school district and save the employer and employee money as well. Wellness programs is another good example. If they institute good wellness programs, you can offset other costs. Smoking cessation, elimination. Physical, pay for physicals 100% upfront. Those are good things that can also reduce costs long term. But basically, some of that's been negotiated at the local level, what plans they want to pick and choose for employees and how much it costs. They've done a very good job in that particular case, and so they are. And we encourage, and we've been rolling out lots of programs in our specific organizations that do those kinds of things. I don't think Fridley's one of our members, but a lot of pools are self-insured, as is Mr. Dewar's, Robbinsdale School District, self-insured as well, not one of our.
Thank you. And I guess going back to what I've heard from Senator Hannon, something came to mind that I've heard in this regards to this is that school districts, there's two school districts, one that's experienced an insurance increase and one that's about to. And so it's, you know, unless they take away some things or shift the costs onto the teachers in this case or the employees, seems like they're not able to really reduce the cost unless we reduce costs of health care in general. But my district, I've heard from them that saying that they've had increases anywhere from 12 to 19% every year for about the last 5 years. So, and then they don't see any end in sight. And that's why I'm a little concerned that we need to try something different.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, it's like this. It depends upon how many people you have in your school district in a plan. Right now, there may be 100 employees eligible. I'll give you the example of Nevis, Minnesota. That school district, I think, had 100 eligible employees. Only 40 take the insurance. 60 take the cash instead of the insurance. The 40 that take the insurance are the 40 that need it the most, particularly families, because they've got sick family members or they're elderly or whatever. That's a cost driver. There's nothing. This bill doesn't address that. That's a fact. That's a collective bargaining decision they've already made. You don't have enough people in. And again, this bill doesn't say that everybody has to be in the pool. If they don't offer insurance, they don't have to be in there. And they've chosen that. So you might have six different choices. You got 40 employees want insurance, but they got six choices that they take because some of them, you know, want this and want that. We're encouraging people to narrow that focus down. Get everybody on the same page. It's a lot easier. But that's part of the collective bargaining process, things that we don't as providers control. But, I mean, that's exactly why those things cost a lot of money. We just had a case in Nevis where there's a $2.3 million premature baby claim. There's 40 employees there. The cost of that insurance policy for next year is going to go up. We just got the calculation. I think 19% or 17%. The pool bought it down over 13% what the costs were going to be. And they had a $2.3 million claim, and they had 40 people on the plan. I think that's kind of working. Sure, they're going to get an increase because they had that expensive claim. But our reinsurance programs as well as, I mean, that's how it works. So a lot of these things. So you just can't say the cost of insurance going up because it is. That's maybe true. But why? You have to get behind that, peel that back, and take a look at what's the real cost driver. If all 100 employees are in that pool, it will make a difference. If all their children who are younger are in that pool, it makes a difference. But they're not. And this bill doesn't require that either. I hope that makes sense. It's a complicated issue.
Yes, it is.
It really is.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. Are there further questions? If not, I'd like to move ahead to Ms. Schwab because I would very much like to get this done this afternoon because we're not coming back tonight. And so ask the questions you need, but we'll try and move as quick as you can. Ms. Schwab, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Gray Schwab, and I represent Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota. I feel a little bit like I'm in Groundhog Day. We've been up on this bill for 8 years now, and my organization is still against this bill, not feeling it really does the things we need it to do. And, Senator Dahl, you addressed those in some of the underlying health drivers that need to be addressed across the state, not only for teachers but for policemen, nurses, and everyone else. I looked at that Fridley letter, and we spent a little time because it's a new piece of information, and that's hard to find in this debate. And the front of their letter, they talk about their double-digit increases in there, and I think districts have seen that, as well as people who aren't in school districts have seen double-digit increases. But I think that second-to-last paragraph on the end really sort of sums it up nicely. It's my belief, our school board, and the belief of some of our employees, not all, that healthcare issues we are facing in education is not going to be solved by implementing a mandatory statewide health insurance pool for school employees. By implementing such a system, local districts such as Fridley will have no incentive or motivation or accountability for looking at data and developing and implementing good strategies with the goal of reducing health care costs. And as Senator Dole pointed out, the pool protects you from some of the very high spikes, but the pool also protects you from seeing some of those local drops in your insurance for the same both reasons. So local districts who do collect data, as this one did, and really tried and worked hard with their employee group to bring their costs down, you're not going to find that kind of hard work, stick-to-itiveness, at least on a local district level, because the local impacts are going to be muted by a statewide plan. So I'll pause there, members, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Sure.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Schwab. I appreciate your testimony. I know you're right. This has been before us a number of years, but never before us in an education committee, isn't that not? You represent all the districts in the state, or your organization represents all the districts in the state, just as the Education Minnesota group represents all districts, or teachers from all districts in the state. And we know, obviously, that there are some districts that look at this plan and they say, well, based on the projections, see our insurance rates go down, or at least in the short term. Others say, no, they're going to go up. So how do when you talk to your member districts, are there districts that would appear to benefit from this plan that still oppose it? And if so, why? I mean, is this purely an economic thing, or are there other issues involved that may be pertinent besides looking at what are my projected rates going to be a year from now if we adopt this plan? Is there anything you can help us with on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, you ask a very good question, actually a very tough one. School districts are in a very difficult financial spot, and I hate to say our eyes are on the dollars, but they are. If I had an aging population at my school district and I had supported all my retirees and my health benefits, this plan mixes active and retirees all together. This could save my district a lot of money. But districts that have really gone the extra mile and sort of done what we've been encouraging them to do are going to be the ones that are penalized. So it's sort of an odd mix that, yes, I could say there are some districts that will benefit from this plan who have insurance structures in place that are so high, this would bring their costs down.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Schwab, and I appreciate that. And I guess that's been, as I've talked to my districts, this is the concern that districts that have done a lot of proactive work to try to understand the cost drivers that are driving their health care costs, which is the driver of the insurance costs, those districts will get penalized in this structure. That the districts that have been proactive and said, we're going to try to address health care costs, we're going to try to do some things to bring these costs down, and they've been working at this for 10 years or 15 years or however long it's been, and then they suddenly come along and say, well, now, as a result of all our effort, we get an automatic price increase and no change in benefit. And the districts that maybe haven't done this or have struggled with it or have had other factors that have prevented them from doing that, they get a benefit. It seems to me that the reward is exactly the wrong way in this structure. And I guess the second thing that you mentioned earlier is a good point to remember, that the argument here is that if we have everybody in one pool, then if something catastrophic happens that is happening, as was indicated previously, in a small pool, that drives up, at least in the short term, the rate. But on the other hand, if you have this large pool and you're working hard in your district to try to, you know, manage these drivers, you will see no benefit from that work. You will not see your rates go down because you're going to be dependent on the actions of every other member of that pool across the state. And so what you then lost is a huge incentives for individual districts to manage health care costs because they don't see any direct benefit from all that work. And it is a lot of work. I've talked to our school districts. That's a lot of work to do this. And then they go through that, and at the end of their year, their experience ratio isn't going to change. Their experience rating isn't going to change because they're going to be pooled with everybody else. So I think one of the things we've done if we do this, is we have created a huge incentive to no longer work at reducing health care costs, which are the drivers of the insurance. And so members, again, it would be helpful if we could bring in this testimony into an education committee and get some school districts come in and talk to us. But at this point, I just think that we ought to be cautious about this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Schwab, did you want a real brief comment in response to that or no? I didn't. I thought you were trying to be recognized.
Exactly. I'm here. Senator Hahn summed it well. Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Griffin and then Pat Sexton, and then we'll try and deal with their amendments or discussion.
Welcome. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Phil Griffin. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the eight nonprofit plans that represent more than 4 million lives in Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, members, we appear before you once again in opposition to this bill. I won't belittle the legislation or the efforts that Education Minnesota is making. The issue is important. It is critical. But as I've said in several other committees, this is no different than the same health care crisis that is facing every other part of state government, whether it be what's going on in the transportation world, whether it's what's going on in criminal justice, whether it's what's going on in every other piece of the world that health care touches. Mr. Chairman, let me just hit very briefly a few points. The bill before you lacks a consistent regulatory scheme. And we have said for the years that you've had this in front of you, we really ought to look at licensing this entity under one of the statutes. As the governor said in his veto message last year, we have over 1,000 pages of health care insurance legislation that we've adopted through this committee over the years that I've been here. And it seems to me unusual that we would say we're going to take care of that in 9 pages with references to only parts of that. And I would continue to urge you that we ought to pick up all of that by making sure this is a licensed entity. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that there isn't more of a hue and cry for the consumer protections that we pass day in and day out in this committee to apply to this pool as well. Mr. Chairman, Section 1 of the bill is a new section which talks about having the legislative auditor do financial audits of this organization. Senator Betzold was right in correcting me that the legislative auditor does do financial audits, but they don't do the kind of financial audits that are done by the regulators that come into health plans, nor the CPA audits that are done. And I would assume that you'd need a fiscal note to add a great number of staff to try and do those kinds of financial audits. I'm surprised that isn't in this bill. Mr. Chairman, members, the board is flawed. I think it's set up in a scenario to deadlock, and the language has said we are going to have some mechanism to assure that deadlocks don't occur by having a dispute resolution process. I'm not aware of any other board of a health insurance company that functions in that manner, and I would suggest that it would be a dangerous precedent to set. The design of the pool states that we'll offer 6 health plans. I'm not sure what that means under state statutes. We define a health plan company under 62A as one of those licensed carriers. I don't imagine that you're going to have 6 different carriers, but I think what they want to have is 6 different policies. But the language is not very artfully drafted to make sure that we get to that point. The applicable laws that govern all these regulations were added in some more applicable laws were added in the Commerce Committee. We applaud that. But as I said before, we think that it should apply to one regulatory scheme. I want to address one last issue in terms of the bill, and that is the issue of the assessments. There's a convoluted system in this bill for trying to track the assessments to make them reflect what's in the market today of self-insured school districts versus those that are fully insured. I don't think this bill tracks it, and furthermore, the bill says that for the first 2 years, all of these people are going to be in a fully insured product, in which case they would be paying the entire amount of the MCHA assessment and the premium tax assessment and then pulling that out when they leave, and they won't have reserves built up to do that. Mr. Chairman, I know that my testimony today is probably not going to change the outcome of the vote today, but we would urge you to look carefully at this. We do not think that this is an idle small issue as we move forward. If you're setting up a pool for all 70,000 teachers and their dependents, this is going to be a very large insurance company, and we think you ought to treat it as carefully as you would any of the other insurance companies or health plans that you've created over the years. Mr. Chairman, in regards to your opening comments, Mr. Doerr and I would be happy to work with District 281 to bring in the award-winning Armstrong High School Choir that picked up their first place in state tournament yesterday. And since my daughter's on that group, I'd be happy to bring them down so you don't have to listen to the Rochester band.
Thank you for the offer, Mr.
Can we
Thank
recess
you.
While we...
Mr. Chairman, if there are questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Time.
Mr. Sexton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee's committee, Pat Sexton from the Department of Commerce. I'd like to start out by clarifying something I believe I heard Mr. Doerr say, which is that they have addressed in this bill all the solvency and governance issues. They have not, to our satisfaction. Jackie Gardner is the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Commerce, and she can address any questions you have. I think in light of the time, I'll just say that they have not addressed the solvency and governance questions that were in last year's bill. This year, again, does not address them. We did meet with Education Minnesota this morning. That was our first formal meeting on this issue. I think both sides have a better understanding of the issues at play. It's our understanding that Education Minnesota is going to go back and draft some language which hopefully will address some of our concerns. We have committed to working with them to make sure that any entity that is created is built to succeed and, importantly, which is our job, adequately protect the consumers that will be beholden to that pool. We are at the early stages of those discussions, and it is an extremely complex issue, and it's extremely complicated. That's our testimony for today.
Thank you, Mr. Sexton. Questions for Mr. Sexton or Ms. Gardner? Turn your hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess, let me just make sure I understand. So your testimony then is somewhat at odds with Mr. Dewar's in that, in your opinion, these questions about, and when you say solvency, meaning the amount of reserves that are available to operate this company or entity, and the governance questions, which I guess are these related insofar as they may be different than other kinds of insurance entities and how they are governed, and those questions are still not resolved, at least from the perspective of the department, the Commerce Department. Is that essentially correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, that is correct. There are a lot of important issues. We did not have an exhaustive meeting this morning, but we, I think, focused on what is one of the most important issues, which is the governance structure of this entity. What does it look like and how does it work? And we want to make absolutely certain that both the entity itself, the people under that entity, and the department all understand exactly how this is going to work. And we are not there at this point. Again, we have committed to working with them to make sure that the entity that is created is successful and protects their consumers.
Thank you very much. If there are no further questions, Senator Betzel.
Again, thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair and members. I don't really have anything further. If you have any questions regarding the testimony you just heard, the bill would have to go to the Finance Committee. As I indicated earlier, there was a small data practices component, but since Judiciary looked at that very same issue last year, they didn't feel a need to see the bill again this year. So from the policy committees that it would have to go to, this would be the last step for the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Senator Betzel. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Betzel, I guess I'm just curious. We had some testimony, and we've got a document here from Milliman Consultants in analyzing this bill, and they point out some issues. Are they correct, in your opinion? Is the opinion of you as the author in Education Minnesota that their analysis is correct or incorrect? They've raised some questions about the cost of this thing and that would incur without any change in benefit to anybody. And if this is true, then it would be, to me, a very strong recommendation not to do this. So I'm just curious if you're wanting to address any of those assertions that they say are result of an analysis of the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wasn't given a copy of the handout. I did have one from an earlier committee meeting. Is this a letter dated February 19th, 2007?
There is a February 19th, 2007 letter.
Okay. That's a copy that I received at an earlier committee meeting. Again, it is referring to last year's bill. I really haven't spent the time to look, to compare, what they're talking about. The letter is, an actuary assumption, which, is a year old. So, but this is something that the Commerce Committee did have, and this particular issue did not seem to raise any questions before that particular committee. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Betzel. I guess the other question would be just there's apparently a difference of opinion between your testifier and the Commerce Department about whether or not these issues are resolved. Who's correct?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I indicated in my statements that and I think I used the analogy trying to paint a moving train. They have raised some issues. We thought that in the introduction of this bill that we had addressed the issues that we perceived from last year to the extent that Commerce Department has issues. We certainly do want to work on them to resolve them because, as I said earlier today, if if the Commerce Commissioner has some concerns about this issue, the governor is going to have the very same concerns. And I want to make sure the governor does not have those concerns. So to the extent that we have not resolved all of the ones that Commerce has identified, I want the work to continue on to resolve those concerns that they have.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Hand.
Mr. Chairman and Sir Betzel, another question, one of our testifiers, Mr. Griffin, I believe, raised the issue that this should be a licensed entity, and that he's kind of raised the question that we have lots of ways we deal with health care costs, and yet this would not be subject to the same kind of treatment as other entities that deal with insurance and health care. And why would that be so? Why is there a reason why this should be treated separately from the other things
well,
that we do?
Simply, Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, they're not going to be selling life insurance or selling health insurance. This is a self-employed pool, and we do have laws in the books, Minnesota Statutes 471.617 as an example, and Minnesota Rules, Chapters 2785, which are referenced in this bill. They're not going to be selling insurance. It's a self-insured pool. So I don't think the analogy is appropriate.
And Mr. Chairman.
Hand.
Senator Betzel, the concern raised about there being no provision for a financial audit as opposed to what the Legislative Audit Commission or Legislative Auditor may do, does that raise any concerns from the standpoint of just public confidence in the financial viability and integrity of an organization that's going to be handling billions of dollars?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, the Section 1 of the bill, which was actually in the bill last year, provided the legislative auditor conduct audit the financial statements as they do for other government agencies. We figured that this is an entity that ought to get a regular audit as they do. Now, as you and members well know, there's also a process by which if the legislature wants to set aside special topics for consideration, they may do that as well, too. But at least, this puts them in the same category as, many other organizations that currently are audited on a regular basis by the legislative auditor, and I think that's appropriate.
And, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hand.
Senator Betzel, finally, just again, we have a letter from Fridley Public Schools. We've got one from AMSD, which is one of the organizations that represents a number of school districts. In fact, in the AMSD letter, they ask us to consider Senate File 2816, which is a bill authored by Senator Saltzman that would amend state law to allow school districts to join the state employee health insurance pool. In fact, later on this afternoon, we're hearing that bill called State Health Plan for Teachers in the Education Committee. And I guess my question is if it's appropriate for the Education Committee to hear Senate File 2816, which is another proposal to deal with insurance for teachers, and the proposal apparently is to find a way to include them in the current insurance pools that the state has. Why wouldn't this bill also be subject to that same kind of evaluation by the Education Committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, as I indicated earlier, I looked at the jurisdictional statement of the Education Policy Committee last year when there was a suggestion that this bill go there. I didn't see anything within the jurisdiction. This is a health insurance issue. This is not an education policy committee. Senator Hahn, you said that this has never been seen by an education committee. Well, that's partially true, partially not. Senator Stumpf used to carry this bill, and when he did, he brought it to the E-12 budget division, which at that time had jurisdiction over policy and funding. So to the extent that, they were intertwined at that time. Since then, we've separated out, so we have a separate policy committee and a separate budget division. But this is not a budget. This is a budget issue. This is not an education. This doesn't affect what the teachers teach in the classroom. So I don't see any way in the world why the Education Policy Committee would have this within the jurisdiction.
I'm sensing we've been over some of these issues. I will take a motion if there's a motion. Senator Hand.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I would move that we pass this bill without recommendation and refer it to the Education Committee.
On that motion.
And Mr. Chair, I would oppose that motion. The part about sending the Education Committee. Whether you want with or without recommendations up to this committee, but I see no reason to send this to the Education Committee.
Okay. If there's no discussion, no amendments to the amendment, all those in favor of Senator Hand's motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Other motions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins. Oh, Senator, who?
We both did, so.
You both did, okay. Well,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, as long as Senator Higgins is busy.
Senator Wergen.
Somebody's looking out for me. Mr. Chair, I have the A3 amendment.
A3 amendment.
No surprises here, guys.
Why don't you explain the amendment while it's being distributed?
Mr. Chair, this amendment goes back to what I did last year on the floor, what I've done in previous committees. I've been very consistent with this amendment, but I intend to continue to be very consistent. What this does is take the pool and make it essentially voluntary, but not just willy-nilly opt-in, opt-out, which is the fear that's been mentioned periodically concerning this amendment. There is one thing, though, that I need to change in the amendment. Actually, I think what happened here is two amendments got wrapped into one, and it's not the staff's fault. It's mine. So on the amendment, we need to delete on line 1.7 after the period, delete it, and delete all of 1.8. It actually states two different things with that sentence in it.
Senator Wergen moves the A3 amendment except for the line that begins in opt-out?
Yes, but Mr. Chair, I want to talk about the amendment a little bit first before.
That's what you move, but go ahead now, explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I represent 13 districts, and some of them really do want to be part of this. I'll tell you that, they really do. But some of them don't. And Mr. Dewar, when you were testifying, you mentioned that these are educators and other staff members that we entrust with the education of our kids. I can't think of anything that's much more important than that in my life, my kids, my grandkids, and everyone else's kids. And so you're right, and we really respect the people that are in these classrooms. I have great admiration for teachers and everyone else in a school. I know of one young lady that would say it was a school janitor that saved her life. She didn't commit suicide as a result of his compassion. And yet, we don't want to give these people the privilege of voting whether to be in this pool or not. These are intelligent people that we entrust our kids with. Can't we trust them to vote on something that they're going to be an intricate part of that really affects something for their families, their health insurance? Can't we say to them, you are intelligent enough to vote on this? I believe, Mr. Dewar and Senator Betzel, I believe with all of my heart that 80% or more of the school districts would be a part of this pool, and that that would be a very viable pool. Even if the bottom 80% of the districts were in and the top 20 opted out as far as health care costs and stuff like that, I still believe that they deserve to have the option of going in or not. And I mentioned, too, that this is not just quickly opting in and opting out. It is a vote of the people. And if they choose to stay out of the pool, they're out for 5 years. So they can't have a bad experience year and hop in. They can't say, oops, we had a bad year, we had a $2.3 million baby or whatever the case might be, and then be in the pool. They can't do that. They've made a choice, and they have to stick with that choice for 5 years. Ms. Beckman said this could be a solution. I don't entirely disagree. I have problems with the pool because I don't think it's very secure. But I'm willing to let the education employees themselves decide that. Ms. Beckman said this could be a solution. Okay, then let the districts choose individually whether this is the solution that they want. Again, Mr. Dewar, this is your intelligent members, your 70,000 people that you talked about that are fully capable of making a voting choice if this is something they want to do. And I mentioned earlier when I offered this a few years ago that Education Minnesota at points in the past has been willing to allow districts to stay out of the pool and still felt it would be viable. At one point, Education Minnesota was willing to exempt, I believe it was 40 districts from the pool, and still felt
that the pool would be viable and save costs for some districts. Well, Mr. Doerr, then please let some of those districts decide that, because in this bill again this year, it's not all-inclusive. Those that are getting cash in lieu can be out. So we're saying this pool is viable without everyone. Then please, Senator Betzold, Mr. Doerr, give these folks a choice. They're the educated professionals that we entrust to teach our children a whole lot of hours per day. Can't we trust them with a vote for something that affects their own lives and their own families? And Ms. Beckman, I bet most of your members would vote to be in it, and I respect that. And it's because of that respect for your members, and Mr. Doerr, the respect for your members, that I want them to have this option to vote. And some of my school districts are begging for that option. And I represent them, and I told them that I will keep representing them very strongly on this issue. Members, I'm going to ask for a roll call on this for one reason, not politics, but I'm going to be on record every time I vote on this as voting for my school districts to have the option to be in or out of this pool, because I believe they are intelligent enough and deserve that choice.
So quickly on this, because I think most people have seen the
amendment before. I've made my point, Mr. Chair, that I think it needs to be a mandatory pool in order to really work to avoid the dust spiral, so I would oppose the amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, the Secretary take the roll.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Berglund? Senator Dahl?
Aye.
Senator Erickson Ropes?
No.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Hahn?
Aye.
Senator Higgins?
No.
Senator Johnson? Senator Coring? Senator Lori?
No.
Senator Lynch? Senator Pretner-Solon? No. Senator Torres-Ray?
No.
Senator Bergen?
Aye.
I have 4-5 vote. The motion does not prevail. On the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins,
I'll move that the bill be recommended to pass and go to finance.
That motion, is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Erickson Ropes and your testifiers, I appreciate your patience.